So I'm here sitting with Eric Tom, my good friend, writer, reviewer, lover of music. How are you?
Really good. I'm really good.
So I've known Eric for 16 years or something like that. It's been a while. And when I first met you, it was I was doing an interview about you and your writing, and that's how I want to kind of pursue that. Let me just ask you first, how did you first get into music?
Well, I was a little kid in a little town in Morrisburg, Ontario, a little town in, down near Cornwall, in the middle of nowhere, really. And I came upon music slower than anybody else because we weren't exposed to it. We had no, the AM radio would make you crazy, still does. And I did luck into two things. One was my parents went to New York City and brought me back a Beatles album, which was a thrill. And I had a paper route, which I raised money to buy 45s with. And I think my first album I bought with my own real money was, real money as opposed to play money, was The Best of the Yardbirds.
Okay, so how would you have known about the Yardbirds?
Because I think I read magazines like 16 Magazine and Teen Beat and some of those kooky...
So more so than radio?
Yeah, the radio came a little bit later. I mean, I just sort of had friends at school, but again, it was a small town in Ontario that really didn't have guys talking about music. We were talking about TV shows we'd seen. I did do some late night listening, like you've heard so many times, of people with their bad transistor radio under their pillow at night, and I listened to WABC. I could still sing that for you, but I won't. And I loved that.
New York City.
And that I did love that, and that was that would come through us in a really crackly signal at night, not during the day. And I got exposed to some tunes that I started to hunt down. Now, in our small town, there was one store that probably had a rack of maybe 20 LPs. And you can imagine how bad the choice was. But the Yardbirds was there. And I think I probably did some research on Jeff Beck or something like that. I think I probably got exposed to Over Under Sideways Down on radio, if that's the right path.
So it was just as much about reading about music than listening to it?
No, I'd say it was more listening first. Okay. There wasn't much to read. And the teen magazines, I'll never forget, in the era of my reading those magazines, my older sister loved Elvis Presley. I didn't like Elvis Presley, still don't. And there was literally a war on the magazine front pages of who's better, Elvis or the Beatles. And so my world divided up that way. So suddenly I was a Beatles fan, not an Elvis fan. And that just got me into British Invasion and reading about it and then trying to seek these things out which weren't available locally. And then a little later on, I graduated to listening to Shom FM out of Montreal, which was a phenomenally fantastic FM station back when FM was so interesting, really interesting.
So this would have been late 60s, early 70s, right?
Yeah, yeah. And another neat thing that happened was a little thing we all went through, which was the Columbia Record Club. Because suddenly I could get 10 LPs. And I lusted over that mailbox waiting for these 10 LPs to show up, which they did. And then I got hassled trying to quit, of course, like everybody else. And it was some great, that was, Steely Dan Can't Buy a Thrill. That was, I should remember every record, but I don't. But I was sort of on the road then to building up a very little supply of LPs that I could go back and listen to over and over and over again.
What do you think connected you to music?
Oh, well, I was abused as a child because I was put into the church choir by my father, who was choir master. So I think as a response to that, I went the other direction. Seriously.
And you're not going to sing the WABC?
No, maybe later. WABC. And I just, I don't know why. I guess it's just a culture of youth. You want to listen to something different. My parents had the worst album collection. They had Lawrence Welk, the show we used to watch on Saturday nights, which was more torture. My dad had a whole bunch of Hawaiian music. I have no idea why, but I love the covers. And so I had no outlet for getting exposed to music other than my WABC at night and my Shom FM later on and reading about it in teen magazines. And I was really starved for music, but didn't know it yet.
How old would you have been?
That requires memory. No idea. I would have been 11, 12 probably.
Okay. So that's interesting that you read a lot about music because you still do. The person, you probably research music more than anybody else I know in your daily life of looking for new CDs yeah. to reviewing them or whatever. So tell me how the writing of music came about.
Well, I wasn't a legitimate writer until I got into my eventual occupation in advertising. So, I mean, I'd taken English as a Bachelor of Arts degree. That was my specialty, and I enjoyed books, although I couldn't read. Still can't. Whole bunch of those books I have yet to read. And I took a commerce course thinking I'd be getting into business, which I wasn't really fond of, but that was a path because English wasn't going to get me anywhere. And when I got into advertising, suddenly I was actually an account person, which is not a creative role. It's a coordination role mm-hmm. for 10 years. And I worked with so many neat people who were creative, that they sort of pulled me over to their side to say, look, you're funny. You got your call reports are have some personality to them, blah, blah, blah. Here's all the reasons, and you're dressed badly. So here's all the reasons why you should come over and be a writer. So I started writing, and at that point, I was always interested in music. I mean, it went from being small town, no exposure, to gradually getting exposure to Toronto, going to Sam's and Cheapies and those kind of stores and Records on Wheels and bringing things back and just having a great time with them. And that would fan out into reading the good old days of reading album jackets where you'd learn more about who these artists liked. And it's just a giant exploding family tree of how all these folks are interconnected. But until you get exposed to the starting point, you don't know there's a path there to follow. And it's just, that's what I still love doing that.
Now, I know you have like one of the greatest or largest collection of music that I know of, but tell me some discoveries, life-changing moments in music that you brought home an album that basically changed the way you thought of music.
Well, it wasn't so much because of records, but you did mention the guard dogs guarding the collection, by the way. I have. I think the biggest thing that happened in my life was I went to a boys' boarding school for 4 years. So it was in the formative years of grades 10 through 13, back when there was a 13. And something happened where there was an old teacher that was in charge of occasionally coming up with special events for these kids that lived in residence in Port Hope to go to Toronto to experience a real show. Mm-hmm. And again, small kid from Morrisburg with no exposure to live music. I mean, I think my first experience was going to see the Guess Who in the CFRA tent at the Ottawa Exhibition when I was probably 15, when it was around These Eyes was just barely out. Right. And that was a thrill. So I did know I liked live music, but it was going to this school where suddenly the master stopped doing it, the teacher stopped doing it, and they wanted somebody to take it over. And for some, I don't know how it happened, but suddenly I got the job of cherry picking from the live shows in Toronto, dealing with a wonderful lady at Eaton's Attractions in Toronto by phone. And I would order up a group of tickets based on how many people I thought might be interested in going. And you would sign up on a bulletin board and your poor parents would get stuck for the ticket price, which in those days was like $6. Mm-hmm. The bus, your share of the bus ride there and back. And that was it. It wasn't that pricey. Especially then. And I started to get involved with sort of being I would choose the talent and we would sign up, we would go to the shows, and man, oh man, that impacted a lot of people. I loved it for me, just selfishly, but I just enjoyed finding out what other people liked and mining that a little bit and reading more about it and saw some of the greatest shows of all time for $6, $12.
Those were the days.
Yeah, those were the days. And that's when I really became hardcore. That coupled with the fact that when we did get trips to Toronto with sports teams and whatever, I would hobble down to Sam's as fast as I could and bring back 10 more albums to my suitcase waiting in the closet, which became 3 suitcases.
And then the writing of music?
Writing of music, I did go to one monumental show, which was an opening act of Joe Mendelsohn before he went loopy. And I was followed by the Jay Giles Band, who I didn't know, and I've never seen a live show like that probably since. It was so wonderful to find somebody you didn't know, and usually if you go to see somebody, you know their music, so that's half the thrill of mm-hmm. seeing them is to listen to the music that's like you're already in your head. But to see somebody I didn't know put on such an incredible performance was amazing. And then I was followed by Yes, which was such a mismatch of... And so we had a yearbook that was published quarterly, and I did a, they needed some content, so I offered to do a review of that show. And I didn't take pictures in those days, and I basically drew a really bad diagram of the stage and did a review of it, and I just really liked doing that. I don't think anybody liked reading it, and they sure as hell didn't like my picture. But Rick Wakeman wasn't bad, though, because he had a big cape on. So he was at least identifiable. But I that got me interested in trying to... I guess the big thing was, it's a challenge to write about music. It's really hard to describe. If I was to tell you about a record that I loved, mm-hmm. it's hard as hell to describe that. How do you put that into words? And that became sort of a challenge for the writing side of me, is how can I communicate what I'm experiencing in this record, good or bad, and tell that to somebody else? How can I try to define this music? I'm not a musician. I can't deal with it in technical terms, but music to me is Christmas morning every day. You know, you dive into something that you haven't listened to for a while, or you have done some research on an artist and you go out and you find it. If you're really lucky later on, some of the labels will send you materials, but it's amazing how quickly you don't really pay attention to some of that stuff. It's sad, actually, because you do get some CDs piling up and you haven't listened to them, and so much time passes that then you can't listen to them because it's no longer current.
Right. Going back, though, tell me, can you recall the first album review you did?
That would have been for Exclaim magazine, and I honestly don't know.
So what made you, so you got into advertising, you got into writing, you got into the creative writing in advertising, and then you wanted to apply that to the music that you loved. Mm-hmm. And then so you went to magazines and said, I want to review albums?
Yeah, I lucked out by running into a guy who was running Exclaim magazine. And he gave me a shot. He said, sure, let's do it. I'll send you some music, send me some reviews. And I didn't know what I was doing. I was terrified. It took me forever. I'm a procrastinator. It has to be perfect. And had to be a certain length, which was never a problem. And I worked with them for 12 years and really enjoyed it because I was able to, they would give me things and I would review them whether I knew them or liked them or whatever. You were forced to come up with something, a review based on what you heard. Which is probably a really good exercise because later on I tended to start reviewing things that I liked. So obviously you've got a personal bias attached to everything you review. And if you start off liking something before you even hear it, you're not liable to dirt the release unless there's something that's really not right about it.
So let's talk about the approach, because I know that you spend a lot of time doing research. You don't just whip off these reviews, no matter whose CD it is. Somebody sends you a CD, you decide that you're going to do it. Tell me the process that you go through in writing a review.
It's actually quite ridiculous the amount of time I spend on each review, because this is by and large a non-paid hobby, which I've been doing for probably 25 years. And I first will take the record and listen to it. And again, depending on your era of technology, you transfer it to a tape if you're in your car, and then suddenly it was something else that you had to put it on. And I would just take that music with me whatever way I could to listen to it and listen to it and listen to it. And then later on, I started to bring a notepad along so that I could add notes every time I heard a song, because you can hear these things 20 times, and then when you got a white piece of paper in front of you, you go blank.
When you say listen to it, listen to it, listen to it, what would be the average amount of listens that you would put into an album you were reviewing?
10 to 20.
Wow. I always find it interesting when you listen to something, and some of the albums that have become favorites, there's a point where on the second, third, sometimes the first, but usually not, listen, it just clicks. There's a moment where something clicks and you think, I really like that tune, or I really like that album. So is that the purpose of listening to it multiple times?
The multiple times is when it doesn't click, I must say. You're totally right. You and I have a similar love of a certain degree of popness to some kinds of music. And those things, when you listen to it, you know right away that you love it. And then when you get another album by that same artist or band, you're half sold in the first place. And there's nothing wrong with that. Because you're talking to people who are probably in the same boat. Rarely do I write it. I mean, I guess I approach a review trying to describe something to somebody who doesn't know anything about it. I do naturally try to sell them on it if I'm big on it, because that's the joy of music. That's what brings so many of us together. That's the Christmas moment of literally the joy of listening to something that just makes your day and is almost like medicine. So those kind of things, you know, right away, but you do need detail. You need to, I will go away too and read about the origin of this band, what they've done. I was always torn between doing a review of that album as a piece out of time, mm-hmm. or reviewing that album as a result of accumulation of the six albums before it. I mean, do you give it context in terms of the artist's lifespan, or do you just treat that album by itself? And I tend to do the history, my job is to educate somebody about an artist's background, which gives some context for the actual review of that record and where they are right now.
But I presume that, like everything else, especially with magazine reviews, you're limited to X number of words.
That's a new thing, sadly, and it's the bane of my existence. The whole world apparently doesn't have any attention span whatsoever, and I have been railroaded by so many editors who say they've gone from being 500 words to 300 words to 200 words to 70 words. And it's like, what? You can't even have an opening sentence for 70 words. And I tend to, over time, I've gotten my reviews edited. I mean, keep in perspective that I'm writing for free. I'm spending probably 4 to 8 hours on an artist to write a review, probably minimum. And then you have somebody take it, not pay you, and take a hacksaw to it and cram it into whatever space they've got left in their publication. That makes me crazy, because you tend to want to own what you've written. You tend to want to take ownership and possession of the story you're trying to tell about this record. And when you have, you know, if you were paid, that might be different. But when you're not paid, it's like, it's a nightmare.
Why do you do it?
That's a darn good question. The sad thing is, I've tried to get mad about things like that and stop doing it, because my goodness, I'd have a lot more time just to sit back and enjoy music in its own realm. But I'm driven to write about it. I'm driven to tell other people about it. It's running down. It's John Candy running into the fish shop with the 144 copies of Penthouse because they printed his letter. I mean, there's a little bit of that, right? There's a little bit of that to it.
Still after all these years.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and I love the response from somebody who might have read it, and you don't usually ever get that response, but it sure is nice when you do. And I tend to have become somebody who likes to promote an artist in an industry that is almost dead and gone, where there is no promotion, there is no exposure, how do you take something you've recorded as an artist and make noise about it, mm-hmm. unless you've got piles of money? So I tend to do these little personal crusades for artists big and small that I just happen to think are doing something really worthy that you really should listen to, or you really should add it to your day.
I mean, if I was to say that I think your role is more for the artist than for the buying public, would that be incorrect? I mean, I think the benefit is great for the artist when they can get that one line or the two words that they can use on their website or on future reviews or whatever, but I don't know how much a review triggers sales. Is there any way of quantifying that?
I don't think there's such a thing as sales anymore, sadly.
No, but let's say 5 years ago, 10 years ago. I know that you believe in artists, and I know that when you hear somebody you really like, you will go to the magazine and say, I really want to do a review of this person. But other than the self-satisfaction that you get from reviewing, which is the thing that you enjoy doing, who do you think you service in doing reviews?
I think I service people like myself who are out there exploring for new music. And there's a lot of us. I think there are fewer and fewer places to find out about it. I mean, since the destruction of traditional FM radio and which has, you know, resurfaced in the form of online stations that are even better than anything we experience. But it's so scattered over such a giant space that good luck finding what you want. I mean, it's out there, but you got to find it. Mm-hmm. And I think that my initial enthusiasm for the music is to kindle that same spark in somebody who wants to know about it. I don't know who they are. I don't care who they are. But if they love music like I do, I want to communicate that this is really neat. You got to hear about it. And here's the reason why.
So is it correct to assume that you will only write positive things? Or do you think about, like do you take the role that if you have nothing nice to say, then why bother? Or how do you review, how do you take on that task of reviewing and keeping it whether positive or negative?
That's another really good question, because I struggle with two things. One is, the best education I could get in music writing has been working with the publications that give me 6 or 7 discs and a time frame, and they want reviews of each of those discs, whether I love them, hate them, not sure, can't decide. And you rarely are in a position to say, I'm not going to give you a review. If you do that, you got to get it. You know, that's not, I don't [S2] Right. [S1] Go there. So that forces me to learn more about kinds of music that I might not even know about. And I think that's a fantastic thing for me to do. Mm-hmm. If I've got to come up with a review on something that's, let's just say, when I transitioned from, say, folk to bluegrass, I didn't necessarily know much about bluegrass, but you read and you read and you read and you find out who's who, and you find out how, you know, the people in bluegrass tend to be a higher level of musicianship than a lot of other musics. And I, again, got to define what it is I'm listening to, so it makes it interesting for you, the reader, and that's the one scenario. The other scenario is I will cherry pick things that I love. I'll contact the publication and say, I want to review this. So obviously the bias is pre-built in, but hey, maybe this new record isn't nearly as good as the album that's two before that. And that's something that I do try to communicate. It's not all gushing. It's not all, hey, I'm not here to mislead anybody by saying this is great and you'll get it home and you'll hate me or you'll hate the record. I try to be honest with whatever reviews I come up with. Sometimes I push positive more than negative because, frankly, I'm tired of reading negative. Don't like to read negative things from people that, frankly, aren't even musicians. Mm-hmm. I mean, what have I recorded lately? Nothing. So, I mean, it's a bit of a glass house position to write about. I mean, what was it, Frank Zappa that said writing about music is like dancing about architecture, right? Mm-hmm. It's like...
Has any of your publications come back and said, oh, you can't say that, that's too negative. He's buying an ad this week.
Well, the ad thing is a funny game, because at some point, these guys that aren't paying you are dependent on ad money, and sometimes you're given a disc by somebody who just did an ad, and they're pretty good. They really don't say, they really don't guide you that way. If I don't like the album and the guy bought an ad, I'll at least find enough positive about the music in everything I write about that it's still a worthy review. I mean, rarely have I ever run across a piece of music or an album that's been god awful. And on those occasions when I have, you know, somebody can't sing, or they needed a producer because it's just a dog's breakfast, I'll say those things. Mm-hmm. But there's really not, you know, there's such a sophisticated level of musicianship in almost everything that comes across the desk these days that you don't really get that stuff anymore. You used to.
You don't think the fact that people can record their own albums has diluted that in any way? The fact that there's 30,000 albums released a year, that hasn't affected the quality of music that comes across the desk?
Well, that's a good question, too. I think that I wouldn't necessarily get exposed to some of those things because they wouldn't be sophisticated enough to have publicity people who would send those things out to be reviewed from people like me. How else would I stumble onto their really bad first release? They wouldn't know me to mail it to me.
Right. Well, I don't know about that. I mean, you know, people know you.
Mm. Well, I really don't encounter things that are god-awful because I would have to say they were god-awful, even though I don't play anything.
So when you said about not getting paid and maybe I couldn't I would be better off just listening to music. How different is the way you listen to music when you review an album versus when you just listen to the album for the love of it?
I'm exactly the same person that, you know, delivered X number of newspapers to go get the best of the Yardbirds. I throw some music on with complete glee, you know, to hear it and to enjoy it. Just me, myself, and I, like anybody else might. I think when it comes to writing about it, then you've got to get your pencil a little bit sharper and start making notes on individual songs, which sometimes wrecks a piece of, it sometimes wrecks an album. If you have to go in there and start to figure it out and analyze it, sometimes you hear it more than you might normally have heard it. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of music, it's like movies. A lot of music is better over time the less you listen to it, if you know what I mean.
No, that makes sense.
You know, it's music grows with you. Good music grows with you. And if you listen to it 30 times, hey, you might burn out before you ever play it again. And I love going back to things that I haven't heard in a couple of years, playing it again. And usually it's pretty sound.
Like just having the luxury of listening to something 30 times is something that I don't have very often. Like I just don't have time to listen to
it. I'm not sure it's a luxury. I mean, there is a work element to it. You have to keep pounding it. And it's such a nebulous topic that you can't really, you know, it's not black and white. You can't say this is that and this is why and this is because. And it's feelings, it's emotions, it's quality of musicianship, it's certain lead instruments that knock you down. It's so many things that make a great record.
From what you do as a writer, tell me how the business of music has changed in the, what, 15, 20 years that you've been doing this?
I think it's gotten really, really sad for the artists. I don't know how they continue being creative and throwing their everything into what they do when there's no remuneration, there's nothing but hard work, tough times, a lot of tears and drinking. I mean, it's very sad, and I think I'm a different kind of a writer now because I will take up more crusades. I will do whatever I can to give that person something for their press kit and or some exposure of some kind, whether two people read it or not. I'm not in control of that. I can't. I'd love to have it in print. I'd love to have it hang around, but those days are gone. And whatever I can do to tell a person like you or somebody else I know who loves music that this is something that's kick-ass, I'm totally driven to do that.
The magazine business is... No, it's...
It's gone.
Well, I don't know if it's gone, but it's got some issues. And they're not magazine issues.
Yeah, no pun intended, yeah.
But how does that affect what you do? Are the opportunities to write lesser now than they were 5 years ago?
Yeah, you got to take the bull by the horns. If you want to write, it's hard work to find somebody to write for. And it's even harder work to not get paid and see people change what you've given them for free. I mean, that's only gotten worse rather than better. But I've learned that you seek out like-minded people who are the editors. The editors, I love them. Rarely have I come upon a bad editor. They're open-minded. They either like or don't like your style and will let you know. The best ones tend not to meddle too much. And they really try to keep your enthusiasm at full torque. And that's I think that's a gift. I think because it's funny that you bring that up. I mean, I'm writing for somebody who loves music as much as I do. But oftentimes I'm writing for an editor that likes what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's kind of weird sounding, but, you know, if they're liking what I'm doing, I've got at least an audience of one. And that's in the giant lost world of... cyberspace, one is better than nothing.
So here we are, beginning of November 2016. Tell me what you've heard recently that you think people should hear.
Wow, I'm going to mispronounce her name like I always do, but I got something yesterday, and I threw it on my iTunes library today, and I boosted it over to my iPod this morning, and I drove to work. I rode the bus to work listening to this album, and it just knocked my teeth out. It's a Canadian girl by the name of Annabelle Chvostok.
Do you want to spell it?
Yes, thank you. and it's unbelievable. It's so good. It's intimidating because she introduces elements of European musics and a wide range of things that I'm not really comfortable writing about until I know more about it. I find that's, but I love that challenge. I love that challenge. If I had to write about it right now, I couldn't. And so I want to.
But it's basically roots music, or is it world music?
Oh, you just can't pigeonhole this girl. Okay. She's got so many musical talents on various instruments. But beyond that, as a songwriter, she's got like crazy variety, and all of it is good. And there's just something about, the level of sophistication of her, ability to entertain that just, it's unbelievable. I think it's, and I'm so proud of the fact that in this case, it's a Canadian artist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how often does that happen? Not as often as it should. And she's it's world stage stuff. It's a really, really exciting album to listen to. And I sort of, and at the same time, I'm still filled with enough self-doubt like everybody else that I go home and go, well, I mean, I'm going to avoid this one because it's too hard to, I'm never going to get a handle on it. Or I go, well, damn it, you lazy bastard, get a handle on it, write about it. And not only will she love you for it if it's positive, but I'm excited by the album, so I want to excite other people about the album.
Mm-hmm.
That's the real goal, not to have her like that I've done something, although that's a factor too sometimes. But it's just a very powerful release.
Wow. Any others come to mind?
Oh, too many. I mean, I'm really, Alzheimer's is kicking in. If I had the covers near me, I'd be better, but I don't. I'm always looking for things I don't know about. And luckily, publicists will solve that problem for you. They'll send you something that they're doing work for, and that can be good and bad. They're doing it because they're getting paid, number one. But number two, they're also usually implying their own high standards to who they work for. And so something that you receive from a certain publicist, certain caliber of publicist, you know is going to be damn worthy. And there's some really good ones out there, and they send you some really amazing stuff. And I just love the fact that, oh my goodness, I've never heard of these people. They've got 5 albums out. Where have I been? I'm going to go back now and find out what the rest of their music is like. And if this is where they are right now, tell people all about it. And just love playing it myself ad nauseum.
Has the love of music for you changed over the years?
No, but the only thing I realized a couple years ago is that I don't want to go to a live music show unless I can review it. And I have no idea what that's about. Because it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of trouble, and it's a lot of pressure. And why can't I just sit back, have 20 beers, and enjoy a show like anybody else? I don't know why that is, and I don't care.
But I presume selling that idea to a magazine or to whoever to do live reviews is also becoming difficult.
Yes, because nobody wants it. Nobody wants a live review. You see that in the newspapers. All that anybody wants is a pre-ticket sale write-up.
Right. Once it's happened,
and that is not. I'm not here to market somebody that may do a crap job or not, or doesn't need the publicity in that category anyway. I want to talk about something that I experienced, past tense, live show, incredible. Very often, artists can lift off the page above and beyond what they put on record in a live scenario, and that coupled with the challenge of photography in the dark. Is a double thrill for me on a whole different level.
But it doesn't get in the way that because it's a job. You still enjoy the process.
I'm still enjoying it. What I don't like is having to read my notes that I've written in the dark 2 weeks later. That just is, you know, forget it. But it's a discipline that I get better at over time. But it is work. But I'm still the same guy. Opening a record or a CD or whatever up for the first time, playing it, getting knocked over by it, or a live show where I'm just saying, my God, I didn't know that person was over and above as more talented than I thought they were on record live. How do they do that? I find it just mind-boggling. I went to a show recently, and I'm going to mispronounce another name, but it was a combination of two singer-songwriters. It was a girl named Brooke Annabelle, who's from Pittsburgh, I believe, and she's a singer-songwriter with a really high elfin fairy-like little voice, which is totally bewitching. And I went because of one song that I could not get out of my head, so I wanted to see her live and what she could do. And she was the opening act for a more senior singer-songwriter named F-E O'Donovan. That's A-O-I-F-E. Lord knows how you properly pronounce it. She's Irish, out of the States. And her claim to fame was being a bluegrass-based singer with a band called Crooked Still. But she's since gone on to play with Yo-Yo Ma and do jazz things with Bill Frisell, I think. She's done, and on stage, it was like Cirque du Soleil. Her voice was all over the place, and she had a crazy man guitarist who played guitar like I've not seen in 5 years. And that combination was like, whoa, that's not on her record. This is even better than I thought. And it's thrilling. It's you walk away high as a kite and just on cloud nine that you actually witnessed something like that. And you want to communicate that too, because if you thought an album was fantastic, hell's bells, a live show by the same person 2 years later is the best thing you've ever seen in the last 10 years. I love it.
Well, I mean, I can understand what you say about the live show, because when it becomes work, that's what it is. But there's like you said, there's nothing like a live show. Like, to experience a great live show, they're just...
Except these days, like the toughness of finding a publication that will actually take your writing, live shows are harder and harder on the participants. It's a nightmare from hell to get to it. You get abused till, you know, waiting for 3 hours, paying too much money for overpriced drinks before the show even happens. And then once the show starts, you get some drunken goon that pushes you aside and throws you to the floor. And
what a lovely experience.
You know, I mean, it's not easy to enjoy live music, but there's something about live music that is such a recharge and such a heart starter that it's just... All that horrible stuff is worth it. It's still worth it. Give or take the tow trucks and parking. And
stuff. Oh, have we had many encounters with tow trucks?
Two times too many, yes. It's very expensive. Especially when you come out, your car is gone, you have no idea where it might be. Nobody's around to tell you.
And it's going
to
cost you a lot of money.
Yeah.
So tell me about the feeling of finishing a review, whether it be a live review or a CD review. What does that feel like for you?
To physically finish it and have it ready to send to your editor and getting the pictures to the right size that they need, that sort of thing, it can't be published fast enough. I'm like a little kid in heat. I'm just out of my mind counting the hours between when it gets to them and when it comes out. I don't know why that is. It's not all about me. It's not just seeing my words somewhere, but some of it is. It's like you've done a little... It's like me having recorded my little album and throwing it out to the masses and seeing what the response is to it. The neat thing about online publications, which I swore I'd never write for, and now I'm writing for and actually enjoy it equally, is the fact that people actually can respond to some of your writing. I'm not sure whether they censor out the bad stuff, because I haven't seen any, but that's kind of an interesting twist too, because you'll get some feedback to something you've submitted that's been published online, and there's a little, you know, bit down at the bottom where they can say, I agree, I saw her in Washington, or, boy, you're an idiot, don't agree at all, it's great to get feedback of any kind.
Mm-hmm. And are you still doing as much writing as you used to?
I would love to be doing it all day long, every day, to be honest with you. I recently taken out a full-time job because, you know, because the bank is the bank, and we all need it, It's a real time sucker. This full-time work is not all it's cracked up to be. It doesn't leave me the listening time that I used to have at night, especially. I used to drive around listening to music. My favorite venue for listening to music is the car, still. And I've lost a lot of that. I can't crank my music at work without being asked to leave quickly. And I do most of my listening, I guess, iPodding back and forth to work and whatever else I can squeeze in. And that's just the listening part. Then you've got to buckle down and write it, and you got to find time. It's harder to find the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the same time, to make matters even worse, I am now writing longer, more detailed reviews than ever before, because I've actually found a publication that encourages it. They want your enthusiasm. They don't care whether, you know, the reader has a... Their brain fell out. They can't deal with anything beyond bigger than a billboard, and they have no attention span. That doesn't apply. If you're a music fan, you seek this stuff out to read, I believe. And I think if you have writers who do certain kinds of music, and you maybe take a risk on buying something they recommended, and you get a similar joy and see what they're talking about and agree, then you got somebody that might even follow your name. Don't know.
Can you share the name of the publication?
A Blurt.
Okay. And Blurt. You can find it at blurt.com. Yeah.
Fred Mills, the editor. It's Blurt Online. Blurtonline.com.
Okay.
Love it. And it's funny because, you know, the sad thing about writing for online publications is you've got nothing to, you know, when you hand off your land to your kids, like that Woody Allen movie, and it's a guy's got it in his palm. I've got my writing when it's online is out in space. There's nothing solid that's left behind. And I find that kind of frustrating because I can't throw out these publications I've actually had reviews published in because it's just my family. It's weird. But I mean,
but it's out there, and now it's out there for a long time.
Yeah, which can be equally haunting.
As an artist that would come to you and said yay or nay, I mean, how responsive are the artists to your reviews?
I have had, because I'm doing a longer, more detailed, and dare I say, a hell of a lot more thoughtful approach to writing a review for an artist, I've had a frightening number of artists contact me. Lord knows how they get me, I guess, through the publication, to actually say really nice, supportive things about what it's meant to them.
Well, I'm sure they appreciate it.
And not in sales. You know, it doesn't sell a CD because nobody buys them, apparently. But they just, you know, there was one artist that I did a review of. It was a husband and wife act called Goodbye Blue. And it was weird. I liked their harmonies. The lyrics were, you know, we had kids, damn it, and we sacrificed our careers to have the kids, god damn it. But their kids are great, god damn it, and now we got to go out and make some more money, which we can't do because the whole industry's crashed. But they had been to a show in New York and didn't have a good turnout, which happens sometimes, as we all know. And not because they're good or bad, but because people aren't going out and doing things like they used to. Mm-hmm. And they came home with the blues, and they got this review, and it picked them right up and reminded them why they're doing what they're doing. And that, to me, was gold. I just said, I'm so happy that you're pleased, because, you know, that's really not my intent. But by the same token, if it gives you a shot in the arm, hey, that's fantastic.
How could they not appreciate it, right? I mean, you come from a place where you really love music, and you respect the musicians. It just makes total sense to me.
But on the other side of the coin, too, it's amazing how many artists, I'm surprised they're not always looking for their name. And I would think that in every case, why wouldn't you track down something that had somebody, something nice to say about your product and not say thanks or something? And by and large, you know, the music reviewing is a faceless, thankless role that you just do because of your own, because of what it does for yourself. You don't expect to hear from anybody. And just more recently, as I said, I'm hearing from people like I never have before, probably because the industry shrunk so badly, but also because I think they see that somebody's taken some care and some time to actually try to pay attention to what they're trying to do. And there's not a lot of that going around.
Well said. My last question is, what's the best thing about what you do?
God.
Is it that, the artist feedback?
Okay, I got an answer. I think the best thing is the fact that I'm getting closer to solving the problem of being able to describe music to other people. That is a hell of a challenge. I may not be doing it right still. I have no idea. I'm just better at doing what I do and hope that it is a little bit better in the long run, but I'm getting more... Oh, let's call it respect, even though that's not accurate. Respect for being able to get somebody excited about something that's out there. And that's always been my goal. If I can describe it enough to make somebody go, oh, I got to go find that and check that out, then my job is kind of complete. Mm-hmm. And I like that. I like that feeling. Again, you have no idea whether anybody's even reading this stuff for the most part. But that doesn't stop you from doing it.
Right. Thanks, Eric. No, seriously, thank you very much for doing this. I really appreciate you talking about your craft of writing.
Well, thanks for asking me.